I'm going to call the City of Franklin's Planning Commission to order. Mr. Fuchs, will you please take the roll?
Commissioner Micklid?
Here.
Commissioner Ritter?
Here.
Commissioner Haley?
Here.
Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Commissioner Bennett?
Here.
Alderman Skronsky?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler?
Here.
Please rise, join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of Thursday, June 9th.
So moved.
Second. Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Now turn to item 3, public hearing and business items. Item A, Payne and Dolan, Inc. Mr. Deal.
Thank you. This is a site plan amendment for an expansion of the berm on the east side of the quarry, west of 51st Street. It'll turn the corner right at the intersection of 51st and Drexel and go west along Drexel for a couple hundred feet as well. What they're doing is adding another berm to the existing berm and connecting to so it'll be a much larger berm. And they're getting the soil from an area within the quarry immediately to the west of the existing berm within the extraction limit area. The height of the berm is going to be the same height as the berm that they did on the south side by Drexel a couple years ago, but it is going to be a couple thousand feet long. They're going to break it into four phases, and starting at the north and working their way down. They have given us some preliminary plans for landscaping and the phasing, but the exact limits of the phasing could change. The exact limits of the berm itself in regards to how close it gets to 51st could change. The engineering department had some concerns and comments about how close it was getting, so they're going to make those changes and bring it farther away, so we'll have to revise the plans. So that is part of the resolution to approve the plans as is with the commission, that they make the changes that staff has asked, and whatever may come up tonight, and then resubmit those for staff review and approval. And because there's a number of phases and it could last a pretty long time, we did add in the resolution, so it's also in the resolution that if more than a year would expire between now and when they start, or between the end of one phase and the beginning of the next, if more than a year expires, they would have to come back to the Plan Commission, or if there was any major change, they would have to come back to the Plan Commission. So with those conditions, staff is recommending approval.
Okay. Questions of the commissioners? Commissioner Bennett.
Yes, from an engineering standpoint, we had a couple of concerns. Number one, for the ultimate width of 51st Street and Drexel Avenue, which are arterial streets in the city, is 60 feet on each side. Therefore, we recommend that they not get any closer to the center of the street than 80 feet. That gives some room for sloping if sometime in the long distant future that the street is widened to a major arterial street. 51st Street is one of our few lifestyle streets that has been quite through the city. Basically connects to streets to the north. And that the outer slope, in other words, the slope towards 51st Street and the slope towards Drexel Avenue, be at least a 4-to-1 slope. We kind of look at anything less than a 4-to-1 slope is very difficult to mow, very dangerous to mow, particularly with tractor-mounted mowers. And that they follow all what the state has called the best management practices, which would be silt fencing, and if they're into close to winter time, that they spray material on the soil so we don't have erosion. The procedures and the best management practices cover all that. Could it spell everything out? Just use the state's best management practices. So with that, I think as far as the engineering goes.
Any other comments for
that? And I believe they agree with all of those.
Commissioner Rick.
Are his comments reflected in the draft resolution or is it
only in the generic fashion that they do have to revise their plans to address these issues and then bring them back for staff review and approval. So they mentioned in their letter of intent that they were going to do those things.
Going back to the comments that you made earlier about the timing, you break the time of 3 phases and so forth, are there sort of presumed there will be inspections to determine when one phase is finished? What's the definition of finished? When landscaping is done or when the grading is done or what kicks off the
My intent would be when the landscaping is done. So they would finish the moving of the dirt, they would put on the topsoil, they would plant the grass, or seed the grass and plant the trees, and it's done. And then they would have a year until they started the next part.
Mr. Ritter? Mr. Fowler?
I just would like to see if we could get two considerations when they're putting together their plans and their landscaping plan. One on the landscaping plan, I know the UDO will specify the types of trees, but I'd like to make a recommendation that they use native trees, try to exclude things like ash and box elder, some of the ones we have trouble with. And if we can get a review of that tree list, I would appreciate that. And the second thing might be a little more problematic, but along the north, the southern boundary of the property, along Drexel, with this plan, with their reshaping of the berm, I would encourage them to consider a right-of-way for a sidewalk or a trail. I am the Trails Committee Chair, and I think it's a nice opportunity for us to think and work with them to see if we get a trail along Drexel. We don't have a sidewalk there, but that would connect up with 51st Street. And I'd like to see if they could include that in the plan that they bring to the Planning Commission for our consideration. I don't know if that's been brought to your attention before, but I would like to see if we could come to some accommodation with that. I don't know. Is there anyone? I don't know if there's.
Well, I'll just make a comment as the chair. What you're making a suggestion. It would not be contingent upon your vote because, as you know,
zoning. Oh, absolutely not.
Okay. So you're only
absolutely not
as the chairman of the Trails Committee.
I'm
you're
just requesting.
Suggesting.
Absolutely.
I just want to second the suggestion. I live close enough that I feel you. So I know that there is some impact in the neighborhood with blasting, dust, and some of the odors and things. So perhaps it would be a mitigating factor to contribute to a trail.
Just one other comment. My impression is that the final plans will be reviewed by staff, not come back to the commission. Is that correct? Were you expecting this to come back to the commission?
I was, but that's not the case. I would just like to see it if possible.
Mr. Deedle, your staff is recommending approval of this?
Correct.
Are you familiar with, did you study the PDDs concerning the quarries?
Correct.
Is this considered to be an expansion of the quarries?
No.
Why don't you go into why not?
One part of the PDD is actual, they have a berm plan. They have a plan just for the berm. They identified in the original PDD that they would be doing a berm to contain the quarry. That berm would be located both on their PDD property and outside their PDD property. They have acquired additional properties along 51st and removed the homes. And the berm will go on some of those properties. The PDD said that would be okay. And the PDD has been amended, or the berm plan has been amended, I believe, 4 times since the PDD has been created to allow expansions of that berm, or enlargements and enhancements of the berm. A couple times to the south, I believe one to the southwest, and now they're going to one in the east. So it's been amended through the site plan amendment process, just like this one, I believe 4 times before. And then I can also mention on the trail, the original PDD did show a trail along the south and east side of the quarry, but not on the west. And now we have the Oak Leaf Trail on the west, and I believe it's our understanding that there was an agreement at that time that in exchange for the trail, the Oak Leaf Trail, it wouldn't necessarily have to do east and west, although we've always kept reminding them that, that we'd be perfectly very, very happy if they would like to put a trail on the east or south sides. We continuously remind them about that. But it's our understanding that there was an agreement with the council at that time that the Oak Leaf Trail addressed that issue, that concern of the people.
My recollection of the ordinance is the zoning manager, i.e. a planning manager now, is responsible for the enforcement of the blasting restrictions and the complaints and making sure that everything's monitored. Since the berming in the south end went in place, maybe you could reflect on the number of complaints that have been filed.
I'm not aware of any. I do share that duty with the city director of administration, and we're not aware of any. So,
would it also be accurate to say that this actually is solely concerned with the placement of berms and does not affect the area that can be mined?
To be really blunt, yes, it's part of their plan. They're expanding that hole in the ground, and they're taking the topsoil and some of the other stuff on top and putting it where the berm's going to go. They're moving that stuff on top and putting where the berm's going to go. But that area is within that ultimate limit of their extraction area. So it's part of the plan. They have not exceeded that extraction area yet. They're getting closer to that limit, but they haven't exceeded it yet. So yes, they're making the hole bigger. They're taking that topsoil off and putting it on the berm. But it's in accord with the plan, and it's still within that extraction limit.
I'm going to take comments from the commissioners, and I do see that one of our distinguished guests, former Alderman Shore, has her hand up too. So before I ask for a suspension of the rules, I'm first going to take comments from the commissioners. Question?
Yeah, I was well aware, as a frequent user of the Oak Leaf Trail that you guys put in, you guys have been great. That trail is fabulous. I understand that you have fulfilled, I think, of the your requirements under the, of the PBD for the trail. My only concern is if we can try to get a right-of-way on the south side, it would be help us in the future if we ever have to put something in. So I understand that you are not required to do this. It would just be something I'd like to see in cooperation with the city.
Mr. Bennett?
Yeah, I think if you would dedicate the full 60-foot ultimate right-of-way on the north side of Drexel Avenue, that would be sufficient that the city wanted to put a sidewalk or a trail along that. We would have sufficient room to build a sidewalk there. And ultimately, that needs to be acquired. One reason that Mr. Siebert, when he came in with some land divisions, didn't dedicate a full right-of-way along was that that block, that brick building that was on the corner, literally would have been in the 60-foot right-of-way. So we would have had to actually probably give him an encroachment if he would have dedicated the right-of-way. He was very reluctant to do that. That's why some of the certified survey maps never really went through. But of course, now since you're owning all this, I'd probably suggest that you do a land combination permit now and get rid of these individual lots because they aren't going to be used as lots anymore. Sure. But, and with that, if you dedicated the 60 feet, I think that would be room enough that to get a trail on the north side, particularly with the city's efforts now of trying to get a trail on the east side of 51st Street all the way to the north city limits. That really would open up for people. They have a chance to get to the Oak Leaf Trail from Austin Avenue, which has sidewalks on it. And if they had a trail on the north side of Drexel, they'd be able to get to that. They have a shoulder, but still, the shoulder is not good for walking. It's good for biking. Doesn't really meet standards for pedestrians. It's dangerous to have people on shoulders.
Sir Deal, do we have applicants here tonight?
Yes.
Maybe they can step forward as make a presentation before I suspend the regular order of business. And if you could please introduce yourselves, name and address for the record.
Sure.
Excuse me.
My name is Brian Endress. I'm with Payne & Dolan. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm our regional manager, and This is Clint Wenger. He is our aggregate area manager, so he takes care of our mining operations. First to the comments about bike trails, I'm a huge biker. I'm going out and doing the Leadville 50 in July. I'm a road biker as well. I love the Oak Leaf Trail. I've talked with Jack and some others about bike trail along 51st, or excuse me, along Drexel. You know, we'll work with anyone to facilitate that. I don't think the burden of paying for the whole thing falls on our shoulders, but when it comes to, you know, some land use and getting a trail along there to get kids to and from safer, we're all for it. So, I mean, I think we've showed pretty good faith with the Oak Leaf Trail and other things that we do in the community that if we say those things, we typically stand behind them. And just an overall thing with this berm project, we had great success doing the one a couple of years ago. We actually got a letter from someone that used to call us to complain quite a bit saying, thank you for putting that in. And unlike like Enron or big banks who want to be a good corporate citizen, we have people that live in this area or we're involved in the community. So it might not seem like it makes sense, like why would we want to do this berm, but we've seen positive results from doing things like this. So to the bike path, yes, we would be willing to look at different things there. The berm, it's really to, we understand that we are noticed by our neighbors. So whatever we can do to mitigate that, we want to do. And we are also not the sole operator in this mine, so we can only control certain things. So with that, I would answer any direct questions that you guys have.
There was a question about native trees.
Oh, sure. Well, maybe you can speak to that.
Yeah, I think in our preliminary berm plan, we just put in typical pine trees and then like sugar maple trees, honeyoaks, those type of trees. Now, those are just standard that we use a lot of places. I don't think we prefer to see something different. We do that. At least maybe sometimes that's a variation. So that's not a problem. I think it's a lot to see.
And we also will send out a letter similar to what we did on the last berm project to our neighbors over there, kind of saying, hey, just so you know, we're not expanding the quarry because we're extremely sensitive to that term, and neither Clint nor I want to go through anything that our predecessors went through in that respect. So we send them a letter basically explaining that we're enhancing the berm, hopefully to mitigate our impacts on you as neighbors. With the last project I was in charge of before Clint came on in this role, and I actually met with two neighbors and let them pick where the trees went because they looked at it all the time. The reason we have that tier in there right now and the fence up on the tier is because the neighbors said, hey, it'd really be nice if we didn't look at that fence. We'd like to have it up there. Well, that's fine. We just need to be secured so that for liability reasons, but we'll do that. If people want to see a tree 30 feet one way or 40 feet the other, no problem.
Mr. Haley?
Just a couple of comments on some questions. As to the native trees, the ones you named off are all natives. I think that's what we're asking for. There isn't a particular list, but there's certainly a lot of conifers, pines, and spruces out there. We recommend you picking ones that are indigenous to this part of Wisconsin. Sugar maples, all of those. They're just going to do better. They're going to be healthier and certainly fit with the environment. And we're always concerned about the non-natives or the more aggressive ones escaping and taking over in the wild. So we appreciate your thoughts on that. Do appreciate the thoughts on the trails. You've been great partners with us, and I think what we're hearing is that there's a commitment in the future to make the trails work to do that.
Sure.
Great. And I guess I'll also say that you came to us a little while back with a similar proposal to start and do the berm, and I think it turned out great. I see it as a great enhancement. What's there? I think you've got an excellent example, better than you can describe to us, of exactly what it is you're trying to do.
Right. Mr. Dietle, the question on that complaints. I live very close, probably closer to Mr. Nicklick, to the quarry, and I and my wife have filed complaints in the past about excessive blasting and noise and things of that nature. And so when I say, I don't know the last time I filed something, but occasionally, and I have to say that there's two companies down there. There's Payne and Dolan, and then there's Vulcan. And sometimes what I've noticed when I was a former alderman for the district is, I'll call them foremen. Certain foremen were hired, and some of them, my opinion, wanted to get out a quota a little bit faster than others. And I went down and complained to the managers about that as the alderman, and they went back and they either talked to the foreman, or the foreman was no longer there after those discussions because they really didn't want a lot of trouble in that area. But there were a lot of complaints filed many years ago, and I see Marge Shore is nodding her head. She knows that, and I know that, and I also know that that there's like a vein that in certain portions of the quarry, especially over on Drexel, where if the blasting takes place, certain homes are affected much more than other homes. And there's you know, there's a Mary over there, and at least two others that are just off of Drexel. So when I say to you the complaints, I mean, I'm not, it's a very, very serious issue, and I want to know precisely, have the complaints gone down, and but what is the statistics, or have they gone up since the berming went in? Because there were quite a few complaints that have been filed in the past, including my wife and myself. So do you have statistical?
Well, I can say with complete assurance that in the last few years there have been no official complaints, because we have an official complaint process. We receive a written complaint, it gets filed in the governed system, and then we respond to it. And in the last couple of years, I have had none. Well, now, there could be people calling, asking questions, you know, did they do this or did they do that? Not an official complaint, asking for some information or wanting us to look into something. Yes, those have happened since then.
Well, the whole purpose, as I understand it, of putting the berming down along Drexel Avenue was to minimize the noise and the impact. It did not expand the operations or the border of the expansion. But that was the whole premise. So here again, we have the same proposal, and the idea is to minimize the amount of noise and disruption to the neighbors. So I think that, well, I want statistical evidence. If it's not in the packet, I'd like it to be a part of the packet, showing what were the number of, over the years, let's take it back to like 1999 to present, and then what was the impact of the number of complaints before the berming went in and after the berming went in. And if you could also check with double check with the clerk's office, because she handles the complaints, formal complaints that are filed. While you may have got calls, or her department also could have received calls, Mr. Dennett. So I'd like you to check with all of the potential affected departments to review the number of complaints that have been filed. And that also includes phone calls. Okay?
Yes, sir.
So any other questions or concerns before I open it up? Mm-hmm. All right, if there's no objection, I'm going to... Sir Dorison, do you want to speak on the subject as well? Or
no.
Okay. Mr. Lewandowski? Let me first suspend the regular order of business to allow Marge Shore, former Alderman Marge Shore, and Mr. Lewandowski to speak on this issue. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded to allow Mr. Lewandowski and Martin Shore to speak on the subject. Mr. Lewandowski.
Maybe my loving good.
It should be.
Yeah. Leroy Lewandowski, 8030 West Winston Way. I don't live that close to the quarry, but I hear it all the way back to my place, which I don't know, maybe it's 2 miles or something like that from the quarry. And just recently I'd washed my car and it rained a little bit. I've got a car sitting out there. It's completely white from the stuff that's on Rawson Avenue driving down there. I think it's time, and a lot of people in the city don't like the quarry, it's time we stop them from doing anything in the city, even expanding one shovel of dirt. Well, about 3-4 weeks ago, I had talked to Mr. Bennett regarding this removal of the homes, and I said, is this an expansion of some sort? And he said, no, there's nothing going on. I guess I don't quite understand that, but I've seen too many errors that this company has made. First of all, many years ago, I think it's probably 7-8 years ago, that they were supposed to put a bike trail. That never happened. They just worked the political end of this thing to their benefits. They did, and they put that Oak Leaf Trail in. The trail should have been on 51st Street. Now, somebody suggested a sidewalk on that side of the street, and I think that's a good idea because that is a dangerous road. But I don't think, I can't see any way that we should increase the activities of this quarry, because if I can hear it at least 2 miles away, I know there's some people living close, and it's a disaster, complete disaster. In fact, many years ago, back in 1954, I owned a piece of property in Sussex, and I was in the business of a nursery. And the back part of my property, or my dad's property, I should say, because he owned it, it was against the quarry, and they were terrible neighbors. And these people are big money men. They could do what they want. It's time that the city stops this activities of the quarry. There shouldn't have been a quarry in the downtown of Franklin. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Shore? You should say Alderman Shore.
Marge Shore, 8046 South 60th Street. I have to disagree with Joel. I call constantly. I talk to them, and I don't fill out reports because what good does it do? But they do call me back, and the neighbors call me, and I tell them, why don't you contact the Payne and Dolan? And they say, it doesn't do any good, so why do it? And they just don't even bother anymore. And filling out the applications, they said, it's just ignored. And I will say, it's bad. I mean, I call when it's real bad, when the pictures are moved, and it just makes you jump. And I have had people visit me, and they just can't believe that we have to put up with that. And I know a few years back that we thought it would be done in 10 years. Well, that never happened. And if you're going to move the berm, you guys, they're going to be blasting. And believe me, they're going to suffer like we do on Drexel. Thank you
very much. If there's no objection, I'm going to extend the ability of people speaking. Please state your name. There's three people here that would like to speak.
I'm Shirley Stone. I'm on 51st, right across from the quarry. And I have been doing it for, I don't know, I've got pages piled high of all the complaints I put in, and nothing gets done. And I haven't done it for a couple of years, not because I'm sick and tired of putting it. Him and no one pays any attention to, and nothing gets done. Now, I've got pictures on the wall that every day we have to move them because the walls go, the pictures are all crooked at the time. Thank you.
Are you the home right by Claire Meadows?
Yeah.
Greg Eats, 6822 Juliana Drive. I own a property on the corner of 51st and Drexel, 7928 S56 South 51st Street. This sounds like a foregone conclusion by the panel here, that this is a done deal. Does that sound about right?
You have the floor.
It's my opinion, that's what it is. I need to ask also, too, when was this project initiated? About how long ago?
The Burman?
Yes, this particular project.
Mr. Dealer?
They submitted a couple weeks ago, about a month and a half.
Okay. All right. I want to clarify something here first. They're just going to add a second berm along 51st Street and not do anything for the first berm that's there now?
Steel?
I need some answers on this.
Say that again?
Is there going to be a second berm just added next to the first berm? That's what I, the impression I got.
And then they'll connect the two so it'll be one large berm. So it's going to be right next to one another, and then it'll be one layer.
Okay. Next question needs to be asked. Why do this at their expense? What's the purpose of that? The reason is I'm skeptical about them not expanding that quarry, or quarry expansion, as it turns out here tonight.
Because they're removing the top of an area.
They're trying to get rid of some soil elsewhere and just bring it over here?
Yeah.
Okay. Can we get this in writing from Payne and Dolan and or Balkan, this a quarry expansion is not going to take place?
It is shown on the plans.
Because if that's the case, then I'll walk away and that will be it.
Well, but, let me first ask the applicant. I thought what I heard you say a few moments ago is that you plan on sending out notice to all the affected neighbors. I'm guessing that also means that you're willing to go out and meet and discuss this entire project, like, correct?
Yeah, no problem. If anybody that wants to go through the plan.
So if there's any questions by any of the neighbors or any way to minimize the damage, you'd be willing to respond?
Yeah, no problem. We met with actually several people south of Drexel, Carl Rupert and his wife, and a couple of others. And we are not touching anything from the original PDD framework. The mining limits where we can extract to are, excuse the pun, set in stone. We are not touching that.
But you are going to start mining further east, right? Once you
we're currently moving in an easterly direction. And what we found is as we moved south, when we created this berm, it helped mitigate our impacts on our neighbors. But none of this is moving into areas that are not permitted. This is all permitted stuff from the years ago era. We're just, as we get closer to neighbors, we try and do activities that mitigate our impacts as best as we can.
Just so they understand, you're going to be removing the overburden over an area that was originally
permitted
for expansion.
Correct.
But with that, you're taking the overburden, the dirt that's on top of the stone. Going to use that, you're getting rid of that by building the berm.
Right, to make the berm larger to mitigate it.
And then you're going to start mining the stone that you removed the overburden from, but that was part of the original approval.
Correct.
I'm not sure that everybody understands.
Correct.
We reiterated that to the letter of intent, and also on the plan, we want to make that very clear that those limits are set.
But again, the question, the gentleman is saying, well, if this is no expansion, and if you will put that in writing, first of all, they cannot expand. It's against the law. It's in the ordinance. They cannot. That's why I'm asking so many questions.
Okay.
But what I'm hearing is they're going to send out a letter, and they're very willing to meet with the neighbors. And I know exactly where your house is. Been over there a few times. I think that's probably the best. They might even be willing to talk to you a little bit tonight. No problem. Oh, they will talk to you.
Okay, that's fine. Because this wasn't very well advertised about this meeting today. I found out about it secondhand this afternoon through an email through my alderwoman and one of my tenants. And I looked in the paper, the Franklin Hub, where the official notices are. I didn't see anything in there about that or anyplace else. So you didn't do a very good job of advertising this tonight, judging by the turnout of the people that are here. And also, too, the quarry doesn't affect people just on the south end of Drexel Avenue. The people on the east side of 51st Street are very concerned about this also. So when you make your plans to contact the neighbors, please keep in mind that the people on 51st Street have a vested interest in this also.
I may have misspoke. The letter that I'm referring to is the letter that's going to go to the people on 51st Street. I referred to a letter that was sent out a couple years ago about the berm expansion to the south.
Okay. Thank you. So for the record, we cannot expand any farther east of where they are now?
There's a boundary. I'll ask my recollection. I'm pretty good on this particular subject. But the PDD has a specific boundary, and they are not to exceed that in any shape, manner, or form. I'm looking at Alderman Shore because I'm pretty sure she's familiar with that as well.
Okay,
we sat on the Environmental Commission together, and we created the Environmental Commission just to monitor the quarry operation.
Okay, that's fine. And for the record, what does PDD stand for?
Plan Development District. It's one of those terms for planning.
Okay, all right. That's fine.
You can
see
if you are. All right, and there's one other gentleman that wanted to speak.
Last issue, if there is a complaint, we go to you with them. Okay.
Or you can start. You should usually start with the clerk's office,
and
they'll send it to me.
Okay.
But
you can also file online.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Marge will tell you exactly how to do it all, so, or I can instruct you, because I've done it. Yes, sir. If you could please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Richard Goodair. Live at 7770 South 51st Street, right, directly across from one of the last berms they made. A couple of years ago, they increased the height of the berm directly across from my house, where they tore down the yellow barns and the farmhouse. And during that process, it seems that there was a lot of dust that was created and made airborne and wound up actually in my house, because I really happened to be gone that day. The windows were open, came home, and I kid you not, I took pictures of it. I sent it to Payne and Dolan. And I got a response from one of the foremen down there, and he said, well, that's just the way things happen.
Do you know his name?
No. I probably haven't.
Okay, so there are two. There are two.
I mean, he was nice enough. He came over a couple weeks later, and he said that somehow it filtered down through there. I guess the question I have, has anybody looked at the drainage and where it's going to go from this thing? I live right next to a ditch that already collects drainage from the west side of 51st Street, and with the cracks that are constantly, they're opening now in my basement. I moved in there about 10 years ago, 9 years ago, and I had no cracks in the basement, and it was dry. And now I'm getting cracks in the basement wall, and I have problems with pictures that don't want to stay where they belong. I actually had some falling off the wall. And it leads me to the next question then, what's going to be the continued increase in vibration as you move east towards your boundary? Obviously, you haven't reached the boundary yet, because we just discussed that you still have more reclaimable material. As you move east, how much further east are you going? In other words, how much closer is it going to be to my already cracked basement walls?
My recollection is there are seismic detectors in key spots around the quarry. Within the PDD documents, there are minimums and maximums, and then there's state allowances. And the planning manager, as you know, Mr. Deagle, is in charge of making sure that all of those things are enforced, that they're being monitored and all that. So the questions that this gentleman's asking is, you should be able to have a report from when the last berm was put up as to the amount of disruption that occurred on the other side of Drexel once the berm was up.
I can't imagine increasing the size of the berm would reduce the amount of vibration as a result of that. But I'm not a shock.
Well, that's why I want him to review all of the complaints. And, Alderman Shore brings up a good point, and that's that maybe the complaints were not filed with the city, but phone calls were placed. My recollection, again, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I thought that we also get a report on all the phone calls. Maybe not. Or that information is available.
Probably is a way to make it available.
And then there's also the state of Wisconsin that is monitoring that, and also monitoring the particulate matter that comes out of the dust matter.
I think those stations were removed. Right? There used to be one on 51st Street, and there was one over near the firehouse. And I think
I know the state comes in and has to come in. Years. Just on the dust particles, I remember talking to Supervisor Borkowski on more than one or two occasions about the dust that's on Rawson, and that the county needed to get its sweepers in there. And I know that he really upped the number of sweepers along there. But calls to Jack Carrion and things like that, he's the Director of Public Works, would be very helpful. I'll just tell Mr. Bennett that whatever we can do, should this pass, and this is a long ways to go yet, but that the dust should be minimized as much as possible. The other thing here is that my question, Mr. Beadle, is if no berming was put up at all, do the quarries still have the ability of excavating and blasting within the boundary?
Correct.
Mr. Spinn?
I just want to point out the city has hired a company that has permanent monitors and check to see that they aren't blasting. And I believe that they have to obey the city a fee for that, so citizens don't have to pay for that monitoring, but we have a private company. I don't, Mr. LeBurgan said, I don't know.
I think there was Aquifer. An Aquifer, that contract was let go, I think, when Alderman Solins was the alderman. I remember something. You have the floor,
with
sir.
With regard to the dusting issues during the construction of this berm, I guess I'd like to see that it takes some special or at least additional action compared to what they did last time. During that period that was being constructed, I could stand in my driveway and get hit with the dust in my face. And now you're going to move another 150 feet, it says, you're closer to my house. I'm a little concerned about that. We don't have the air conditioning on because we live in Wisconsin right now, and the windows are open. And I guess I'd like to see that they're going to do something different to keep my house from filling up with dust. We've got a predominantly west wind where I live, and it's pretty strong. Keep the dust on your side of the road there. I really appreciate that.
Sure. Maybe after this meeting, too, we have an aerial. We can point at your house. We'll give you our cards and just give you at least a phone number if you see something that's not a lab that reassures you that you'll get immediate assistance.
That would be excellent.
Thank you very much.
That's all I have.
Is there a motion to return to regular order business? It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Mr. Petal, I think that there was a lot of very valuable information that came up from the neighbors. What I'm hearing is that Payne and Dolan plans on sending out notice to the people in the area, probably contacting the alderman for the area, and if they could make themselves available for questions and suggestions from the neighbors. I do know, and I'm sure Mr. Andrews knows this, that when you have cloudy days over the quarry, those are probably the worst days when the blasts go up and then bounce off, and sometimes they may bounce a mile or two away from the quarry. So there's impact from this. I mean, I filed complaints myself. So. All right. Is there any further? What are you asking?
Just one last comment. It was my understanding you guys are not the only operator in the quarry.
Correct.
So operations by other entities in the quarry could be the cause of some of these issues. If I remember correctly, when I was on the Environmental Commission, you used to wash your trucks before they used to go on to Ross. I think you have a washing facility to get the dust off the truck before they go. Now, do all the entities in the quarry have that washing operation? If I remember correctly, you were the ones who were doing it. The other company was not.
Well, there's been quite a few changes in the past few years. Now that we're down the hole, we have an area that trucks run through to get somewhat off, but then we also have a 1,500-foot tracking pad up out of the hole that gets most of it. But then we have a broom that is staffed out of Franklin. It's a vacuum broom. It's not just the bristles. It actually has a suction thing, because what will happen out on Rawson or whatever is you might get the stones with the broom part of it, but it's that fine particulate that sticks to the road. So we actually have a vacuum broom that picks that up, and it's based out of Franklin. So those are the measures that we use along with water trucks for dust suppression. And I don't know exactly what our neighbors in the hole do to mitigate their stuff. And I'm anxious to meet with the gentleman who just spoke afterwards to see if it was on our part of the property or their portion of the property. Because I can definitely control what we do, and we will make it right. I can't necessarily control the other half.
I know when I was the alderman, I read the entire PDD and then the UDO. Great reading. But I found in there that there were stipulations that 75%, I believe, of the quarry operations, including the asphalt plant, were supposed to be moved off the rim to the bottom. When confronted, you weren't there, Mr. Reisman. Was in place, and when confronted, I think that the answer from Payne and Dolan was, well, if we agreed to that, fine. And then the road had to be built all the way to the bottom of the quarry. I forgot how many feet it is to the bottom, but it's a lot.
The quarry's about 200 feet deep, but it's deep.
Yeah, and the reason for moving operations down there was to minimize the dust that was being pushed over from the top of the quarry. And then the odors from the various chemicals that were being used and all the asphalt, that also was supposed to be minimized. And so I don't remember the exact figure of what that road cost, but it was not cheap. It was probably in the millions of dollars. But I want to say it was something like $6 to $8 million. But my follow-up is, because I do construction for the sewage district, and we have tracking pads. Your tracking pads far exceed what is required under a lot of the state permitting. I think some of the things you do to suppress dust, at least if they continue to do what you did when I was on the Environmental Commission, I think are admirable to keep trying that. I would be interested to see where the dust is coming from.
Sure.
All right. Anything further? What action are you asking for?
So we were originally asking for approval with conditions, although now there's many more conditions, so it wouldn't be inappropriate to table this for another meeting. But I would like to note that they were hoping to be able to start construction on the berm.
Well, I think if you add all of the conditions that are being talked about with the discussions, it still move along. This has to return to what, the Plan Commission or straight to the Council?
Only, at this point, if it's approved with the comments that we had, only the landscaping plan would be coming back.
Well, the comments, you're talking about the conditions that would be established by the council, by this Plan Commission?
Right.
Okay, do you have them down? Do you know what they are?
Yes, if Nick will help me out as I go through here.
I know there was native trees. It's obviously minimize the amount of dust. The dust that's coming in should be cleaned up as quickly as possible. The members of the Payne and Dolan are going to be meeting with the people in the surrounding area. There was a request, not a demand, for a right-of-way along Drexel Avenue. So,
and those are going to be the two suggestions, the trail on the south and the right-of-way expansion on the south. Those I wouldn't be sure about. I think those were just suggestions.
Yeah, those were suggestions.
They're suggestions.
Yep. And
which we have in our letters.
Yeah.
All right. With that, do you have a suggested motion here?
It's on that.
If not, is
it's on the back.
Hmm?
It's on the second page in it, I suppose. Yeah,
is there a motion that the Plan Commission for the City of Franklin recommending a resolution bending the site plan for Plan Development District Number 23, parent Payne and Dolan Company, parent to enlarge and enhance the existing earth berm, parent at approximately South 51st Street between West Rawson Avenue and West Drexel Avenue, parent by Payne and Dolan, the applicant, with those conditions as additional conditions as outlined by the members of the Plan Commission tonight. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved. Second.
So moved and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, vote.
I'm sorry, one last comment. Would it be too much to ask to work with members of the trail committee when you are putting together that landscape plan, or as designated by the mayor, somebody that would speak with you on those right of ways? Is that too much to ask?
Do you have any objection to talking to Mr. Fowler?
I have no problem with Mr. Fowler.
There's a lot of people that do.
A lot of people do have objections talking to
him. All right, we have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded for the discussion. Seeing none, all those favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, six ayes, no noes, ayes have it, motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
I just want to thank the people for showing up and sharing your comments. All right, next item on the agenda is report from Congress for a New Urbanism 19 conference.
Mm-hmm.
feel about Jill?
Yeah, it was nice.
Let's lock up the office. Meetings with Jack. Jack had them tied up all. Roll a monster.
All right, you good?
Yeah, just for the record, Mr. John Miklik is going to take us through slide presentation on CNU 93.
So this is the Honors to the New Organism. We have their annual conference in Madison, which is nice. I could get there car ride away. Didn't have to pay for a hotel or anything. The punchline is at the end, and we find out where it's going to be next year. I walk around with this on. Three people. You were three from Wisconsin. Because they read the book, The Geography of Nowhere, wherein they used Franklin, Wisconsin's property tax statistics to show cost per resident to get utilities out to their houses and stuff. So I was a little bit of a celebrity because they knew who I was. So I don't want to give a lecture on what New Organism is because I think you guys know, but I can tell you that it's a terrible name. No one in this room likes the word urban, I don't think. Nobody in Franklin hears it without getting a little shook up. But that's what they call it. But what it really is a philosophy that promotes the creation and restoration of diverse, walkable, compact, vibrant, mixed-use communities composed of the same components as conventional development, but assembled in a more integrated fashion in the form of complete communities. That's the difference. And that's what they talk about at these conferences. And these are people who aren't just wearing ponytails. These are developers. These are realtors. These are government folks. And what they're trying to do is to get development done within an integrated whole rather than things happening on islands all over the place. The visual shorthand they like to show for the difference between traditional neighborhood development or new urbanist commercial development is this whole top and bottom thing. And down here you recognize this road, more roads, parking, and then still grass where they would like to see what seems to be working from an economic development standpoint is skinnier road, on-street parking, pedestrian and street plantings, and then parking in the back. And that's what realtors have been trying to advocate and what the developers are now starting to accept as a lucrative option. Another piece of visual shorthand, this is what we're used to. We plant the box in the back, we put the asphalt up front. This is kind of what you would like to see in the page shows. But I spent 4 days there, and I was in hours and hours of these meetings and sessions, and I'm skimming the surface of a whole bunch of stuff, but if we would spend 2 hours talking about how you get from this to this in terms of regulatory stuff you have to get from, what do you have to change in your plan, what do you have to change in your UDO. So it's not just touchy-feely, I want to be able to walk from the forest to the grocery store. It's an economic development issue that they're dealing with. This was originally going to be in my presentation about visualizing development, but they used it at CLU as well. A lot of people, when you tell them about setbacks, about wanting to build a building up to the sidewalk, they don't really understand what you're talking about from that over-the-top layout that we're used to using. But when you visualize it this way, you ask them, would you rather be out in this environment, or would you rather be in this environment, they tend to like the lower environment. And that's just a matter of being sensitive to the idea of setbacks. When a developer comes in, they may want to go this way. It can make it easy for them to go this way. If they do, it's been shown that more development comes in. Who I met at CMU, I met plan staff and planning commissioners and a lot of those guys there. I met community activists. There's bike guys, walking guys, all kinds of guys who are, those are the ponytail guys. Alderpersons. A lot of you guys were there. Met some people from Oak Creek, met some people from Greendale, Greenfield. Developers are there. And that was interesting. for all the sessions they had where you'd be sitting with your notebook and taking notes, the most valuable time was spent when you they'd have these breakouts where you would just mix with people. And you could tell the developers, they look like developers. They're burly type guys, and they usually have a hat with the name of their development company on there. But it was interesting to talk to them because they are not all about what feels good or what was fun to walk in. They're about making a buck. And they're saying, this is how we can make a buck. It's going to work now. So those were interesting conversations. Realtors. I'm supposed to put a R trademark on there. That's a trademark word. All realtors want to do is sell houses. They don't want nice neighborhoods for the sake of nice neighborhoods. They don't want nice downtowns for the sake of nice downtowns. They want to sell houses. So I was talking to these realtors, and the National Association of Realtors actually goes on record with a couple of these things. The new normal, they say, is growing demand for rental, multifamily housing, something that a lot of suburbs like us are not all that comfortable with. But that seems to them to be the wave of the future. Smart growth. They believe in smart growth because they say the healthier a community is, the better the environment is for them. That means they're making some money, they're selling some houses. They find that people looking for houses nowadays, the size of the houses is only more than 12% of the people that they're selling houses to. 88% of them ask, where's the grocery store? Is there a walking area, a park nearby? What's the amenities? 88% now ask about the neighborhood. It wasn't always that way. It wasn't that way for me. When I bought my house, I didn't ask any of those questions. I asked how big the house was, and I asked what the backyard was, what the basement was like. Do you want to food? Walk score. Anybody not know what the walk score is? All right, walk score is the thing that's on the internet. Log in. Put your address in there. It'll give you a score from 1 to 100 based on what you have around you and your accessibility to those things. So a good walk score is 70, 80, 90. Great walk score. Bad walk score would be 1, 19. Walk score is now used when promoting houses. On a little selling house sheet, they have a walk score and they tell you what the score is. So that's definitely something that's in their tool belt now.
John, I'm just trying to grow. When you say a walk score, is that to a particular location for a particular product? Or that would be you're going to walk to the grocery store and then you're going to walk to the park and you're going to go a different direction, different.
Well, they have an algorithm that looks at what you have commercial, civic, and entertainment and amenities around and what would get you there. So if you have your closest grocery store 2 miles away, your walk store is going to go down. If it's 2 blocks away, it's going to go down. And they have that 10-minute rule. People will walk for 10 minutes and ask that.
Did they take into consideration somebody going on a bike in the network?
Yep. Bikes, walks, non-vehicular travel. They use walk score as a shortcut. So conventional wisdom, what they tell me is conventional wisdom is often wrong about development value. And this was one of the most interesting sessions I saw. And there's going to be numbers up here, and you're gonna say that can't be right. But I want the guy to come here and give this presentation or give me all those notes, which he'll do. And I was shocked by these numbers. Annual tax yield per acre. So you did this in Sarasota, Florida, and we all know county residential, yeah, 3,600. County multifamily, 7,000. Walmart, we all want Walmart, $8,374. Burger King, $15,000. But now you get to an urban mixed-use mid-rise, $790,000. Could that possibly be true? This is residential with a little bit of retail at the bottom. If you've been to Wausau, Wausau billboard, it's just like outside. Can that possibly be true? So this guy, Joe, he's a developer, went to Harvard, real estate guy, but he's still geeky guy, regular guy. People pepper him with questions. He says, look, I'll be pessimistic and do the numbers again. And he's still got way up here in five figures, up in six figures. Now, obviously, an urban mixed use high rise is not appropriate for someone like us or anybody else. But certainly, these kind of buildings which we would have rejected out of hand. We would go, I think the conventional wisdom is Walmart or a mall type retail would exceed the value of highly residential type development. But that's not the case. I thought that maybe this was just because it was one spot. These are just the numbers again because I didn't think they were correct. He did the same thing in Asheville, North Carolina. That's where he actually works. And the numbers jump the same way. Four-story mixed-use condo, $44,000, compared to the mall, $7,000. I mean, I've only been doing this a little while, but that shocked me. I don't know if I'm going to know in the room that shocked me. The room where I was in listening to this was shocked, a lot of murmuring. The session I went through that lasted longest, this was 7 hours, all day. It was called Retrofitting Suburbia, and this is the book. What they're talking about is taking what already exists and what was built according to best practices 20, 30, 40, and 50 years ago, and now recognizing what has changed, what consumers are looking for, what commercial people are looking for, and seeing if you can catch up with that stuff. So the challenge is they stated, this is on a Taco Bell.
That's Franklin.
Yeah. How do we accommodate more growth? And we spent, this is 3 hours we spent on just that question. And improve the quality of life in blighted areas. And by blighted area, what they mean is this would be considered a fairly blighted area from the standpoint of is it usable to pedestrians and bikers? It needs to be fixed in that way. So you can call that a blighted area. And how do we retrofit the least sustainable landscapes we have into more sustainable places? And there were some speakers there, two in particular, that were very conservative speakers. One was an economist, who wrote a book about the power of cities. And he talked about the fact that basically the suburban development model, if you look at it closely, it ends up being a little bit like a Ponzi scheme. That's what he said, Ponzi scheme. Because you're always growing and saying, well, then we're gonna build on that growth and it's gonna come from that and then that's how we're gonna pay for that growth. And so it ends up not being the most sustainable model in the world. Whereas pre-World War II, he was showing how things used to develop and it was a more sustainable model. So he would like to be back. Another guy from Minnesota gave a speech, same sort of thing. Conservative guy, he said, if this manner of growth isn't going to stand, something's got to change. One of the things they talked about at length is how demographics are changing and people aren't recognized as well as we should. In the year 2000, that's not long ago, that's only 11, 12 years ago. A quarter of the people that we were thinking were going to move in and move out of the community were married with children. Those are people who buy a ranch home and want a backyard and want live on a cul-de-sac. This is kind of a conventional wisdom that we've been working with. But something changed. These are the guys right here. Me.
Hey, Roger.
By the year 2030, that'll be me. I'm
holding
it.
I thought that was you.
A little bit dumb happy to go to the belt.
So 85% of new households, 85%. Are non-family. And that means these are people who want building for apartments or for multi-family dwellings. They're looking for condos. They're not looking for.
You determine non-family as an unmarried or a widowed, widower, no children yet at the household, is what you call non-family.
Yep.
Okay, because everybody has family somewhere along the way. But it's in the
non-family unit.
Yeah.
So it's because people are living longer than we thought they were. These guys weren't supposed to be in this kind of shape. They were supposed to be.
Yeah, true, sir.
So some good news that people have been talking about and was big news at the conference was the Institute of Transportation Engineers, and these are guys who are obviously very serious. They put out their new recommended practice manual, and there's some differences in the new manual. Number one, they talk about pedestrians for the first time. They never used to mention pedestrians in the transportation.
Excuse me.
Cool. Hughes, could you
maybe you gotta go out there and ask him to move down the hall?
Secondly, you've heard the old joke about trees being called fixed hazardous objects. That's old. They're not referred to as fixed hazardous objects anymore. In fact, they're out there being referred to as traffic calming measures. And we have a picture up here of some street vegetation that in the book, in their handbook, they were saying actually slow down traffic if you have trees closer to the street. Sidewalks are no longer referred to as vehicle recovery zones. We have respect now, but actually transportation areas, their infrastructure.
And that's a vehicle recovery zone?
They call them vehicle recovery zones.
So it's like your car broke down, you push it up on the side?
No, you, when you get in the car, you recover the vehicle. So your
zone is
the sidewalk.
I got it.
And transect-based road design system for context-sensitive street lights. What does that mean? What that means is, back in the day, when someone says a road is going to be an arterial, or a road is going to be this or that type of road, it is what it is, and it will shoot through whatever it shoots through, because that's what goes in that zone, and that's what goes in that area. Now, we're talking more about context-sensitive street design, called CSS. So that means if you were going to put a road of one type in an area, and you say it's an arterial or it's a collector street, but there's a school there, the context is different, you change it, and you work on a transect. I mean, transect means that when you start in a less dense area, it's a different road. When it gets denser, it becomes a different road. When it becomes residential, it becomes a different road. So we're talking about roads like Ross, Drexel, things like that. Those roads are stubbornly the kind of road they are, no matter what's around them. So when Drexel enters residential, it's still Drexel. And when Rossing enters an area where there's residential right up to it, it's still Rossing. Now the Institute of Transportation Engineers talks more about context-sensitive street types, meaning within the street, you change how they travel, how they look, their width, and what kind of street vegetation you put on them. Here's a retrofit example that they gave. They like to work at different scales. They were talking about regional retrofits, which is not germane to us, block-wide, building-wide. Here's one. I picture this up at Clear Meadows. It's an apartment complex, and it's got parking inside, and it's got right here, these are little areas that are like private courtyards. So you have amenity courtyards, you have parking inside, which also allows for the ventilation all the way through, and then they have double-loaded corridor, meaning you can bring it out either side of this corridor, and they have a human-scale block that they can now walk on. And it's not perfect. It's not the best thing in the world, but it's better than what a lot of places get. And people who live in this particular building have access to amenities that you wouldn't get in the building that's shoved right in the back, that's all parking in front, and maybe a little path. Another thing they talked about it greatly is planning for the future when you can't do what you want and need. We recognize this kind of layout, got a lot of parking, you've got the big box back here. What they're saying is recognizing that in the future you want to fill in that area, you would plan it thus, so you would plan your parking lot so that in the future buildings go in there, roads go in there. This road didn't exist before, but they planned for it, and now they can put these little buildings here.
Hey, stop here.
Yeah.
Bayshore.
Yeah.
I grew up on the northwest side. I used to go to Bayshore all the time. Bayshore was the big box with the parking lot that you're showing.
Mm-hmm.
And then California, my understanding, the California guys came in and said, tell you what, we're going to build you the new Bayshore, and we're going to just take everything out of there, and we're going to plug this in, but we're going to keep Sears down on the north end of the thing, but we're going to change all the parking, and we're going to build high-rise parking.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to be very honest, I met with the guys because they were thinking about doing the same thing here.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much the planning as much as the developers walking in and saying, This is what we've got in the community. Bingo. Let's put it in place. So, I mean, if, I think if I were to talk to Mayor Hintz, former Mayor Hintz from Glendale, he would tell us that it was the developers that came in with the plan, not the community that had the plan.
Well, if a guy throws a curveball at me, I close my eyes and I make contact and I hit the wall, that's what happened. They had what they wanted. What we're saying here is make your own luck. You get the development you deserve. So,
well, I guess what I'm also telling you is that the same people that built Bayshore, I sat down with, and they were looking to build Bayshore here on 76th and Ross. To redo the whole thing.
Well, further on, there's be something to that effect.
I'm just saying that.
You mean on all four corners?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of wetland issues. I think financing is a big thing, but the biggest portion in those types of decisions is the amount of truck traffic, amount of vehicular traffic, and what's the projection for vehicular traffic.
Another thing we talked about, and this came from a book called Sprawl and Burn Manual, she actually just came out of this session, was better use of space. She had an enormous retail estimate on the money and energy replacement. This is your normal retail development here. You've got a lot of parking, you've got areas in the outskirts there that haven't gotten to the point yet. What they would suggest in the new urbanism viewpoint is to change that parking lot and make a denser area so that some of these things that might have been built out here and impinged on green space that you have now are here. And here's all your parking. Instead of all that impervious surface, you have your parking in these ramps. You have a facial density. And you also end up with a de facto downtown. Many suburbs don't, or some didn't start with a downtown and move outward. So then you have to build a de facto downtown.
John, is that also when they're doing that predicated on like an ice system offering? Because I noticed on some of those major, if that one, they have like an ice system offering through it, and then a major four lane road going pretty much around it.
Well, I think the relationship of this to this exists for this place. And now you want to change this.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a chicken and eggs.
Are you familiar with those luxury condos that we built down on the lakefront? I think we're in St. Francis recently.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just in there, those are gorgeous. I mean, that would be fantastic if that kind of development was
happening. Sure. Very, very controversial in this kind of mission.
No?
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, the type of development.
That sought to get it happen that way. By the desire of the community to have economic development at all costs.
Well, I'm not talking about the quality. The type of development that you're talking about is that, and they have all of the amenities and underground parking and all that. I guess I would agree with you that every time you walk the lakefront, it's not good for the public.
It could have been prevented.
There were other
people that actually insisted that green space wasn't as essential as that town.
There were other opportunities to develop that property in a more sustainable manner that preserved the aesthetics of the lakefront. And yeah. Kevin's completely right, because I was at some of those meetings as well. And again, they talked this game, but when it came down, when push came to shove, they only got through the first inning, and then they just changed it.
Yeah, if anything, it should have been built across the street.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the reason.
Because that's our lake.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a lot of pressure from multiple fronts. I think that was going to have to have some of the elements of this, but I would not show that as a representation of what true is sustainable or what they call the urban. It's got some elements of it, but not all.
Well, it does speak to the invaluable nature of green space.
Absolutely.
And that's what you always got to think. That's what John was saying. Sometimes as you move out and grow, you start gathering up green space and focusing back in.
So they do have a trail in the front that you still have access to see.
Now, what about the...
Actually, that's county land, and it would have to have not insisted on them doing
What about that? What about the new developments that are between Summerfest and the Milwaukee River, towards the end by the bridge and harbor? Is that the type of development? Those are high rise with commercial.
High rise, commercial.
They get a lot of good restaurants.
That's the highest property in town.
Yeah.
And that's the most desirable place for people to live, right?
Right.
Young and old.
You've seen the condominiums and the contracts are really. Their value is going up and up. Now they suck a little bit because there are a few that are open.
I was trying to tell a property owner today that if they're going to build something, that's what I would own to build. So.
This pair, for some reason, wants to buy everything off the crossroads. Pure coincidence. The layout, unfortunately, is kind of what I see in some of the central place, a lot of asphalt there. And it's not a place that people, it's a place to pop, it's not a place to go, it's not a place to be. And of course, what they suggest is this would be a place that already exists, so they're talking about how you can redevelop it. You fill in these areas. And instead of parking across the horizontal plane, you have up or under, but Dallas is a place that people can walk in and among buildings. And people who live these houses here are going to go up and down. That's just going to be either close to the development like this. Selfridge, for example. If Selfridge does what I hope they do in 10 or 20 years, which come up on the slide here, those houses around there that are not very expensive at this point are going to be pretty expensive. Suddenly, you're going to be able to walk to something like this.
John, before you go on, you can go back to the start of this thing. Did they talk at all about, here in Wisconsin with our winters? And I know they didn't do this in Bayshore, but they did it to a certain extent, that you were able to access a lot of these facilities through interior passageways and moving more with causeways over the roadways so that the pedestrian traffic would not have to be exposed to
the elements. One of the guys was in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's right.
So I was just going to, did they talk at all about that?
Yeah, there's already on that. How many of you?
Let me ask you a question with the property that's where Century is on 76th and Austin.
Yeah.
And then you've got the McDonald's, and then you've got that big open lot that's there. Would this be the kind of development that would start off, you plan to have maybe the condos?
Four more slots
to wrap around, and then as you
want.
Did you get rid of the Century and all that? It converts.
All right, Selfridge.
How is it?
That's Selfridge, basically. And what Selfridge is doing now is they're building some apartments over the corner here.
Yeah.
Nice. That's going to be nice. And I think if you live there, you'll be able to walk to something. You don't know what that is. But walk to Mason. But ultimately, what you want to do, you're not going to tear down your whole wall. And I don't think they want to tear down their wall. A lot of walls are using their structure to make the foundation of fiction rules. And then filling it in. I mean, this is the ultimate build-up. This is pretty ridiculous. But it gives you an idea of what they're doing. They're putting some apartments on here. They consider putting some trees and streets for apartments. And replace that parking paradigm that we're used to with what we see on the foundation. Now it's a commercial community. And businesses that are big, businesses that are small, could be attracted to a commercial island like that, but it wouldn't be attracted to long as this business. The software just have some problems with the tenants there. It's just not exciting to go to software. It's not an attraction. Yep.
Is that a conceptual picture, or is that something actually built?
That's conceptual.
Okay.
There are instances, though, where they've gone to phase one or phase two of this sort of thing. This is sort of, if we went all the way and maybe had a water feature, that's...
Milton, Wisconsin's done some of this, and some of the places around Madison, down in Illinois, they've done some of this.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois. To actually just cut down on infrastructure.
that whole structure down at St. Mary's with Whole Foods. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's fantastic. That's,
yes.
That'd be fantastic.
Okay.
Now, yeah, is the gray water
yep.
potential project? Now, just a question. We get snow around here. Because you have such an impact on the density of that. Push the snow into the retention ground.
You got to build your geographic location.
Well,
so this is just general.
But I think they're set up pretty well for snow.
And this is the type that's 790,000 per acre the return?
No. That was just an example of in a suburban environment. There were a lot of people who shy away from two and three story buildings. Or multi-use buildings, and now they come to find out these multi-use buildings are a great return.
Generate more tax.
Yeah. So here's our de facto downtown. This is Ross and San Francisco. So here you got, let's say that's the Chase Bank, and who's that other bank, and here's that gas station that has reviews. And here's all the important people go to lunch. So here's an example of a transect. Well, we're going to see a transect happen. This road looks like this road because it makes sense way up here. This road looks like it's there because it makes sense way up there. They suggest this multi-step approach. First thing you want to do is you want to get some trees. In the old days, and the not so old days, this was a hazard. These are hazardous objects. But now it's hazard. But now what they're finding is it slows the traffic down, cools the area down, all that good stuff. So none of the building has changed, and yet it looks rapidly different just because expensive downs and trees. Hopefully not fashion. Then the next step is get in there with the building, bring them up to the sidewalk. Now you've got it downtown. That can be.
Let me see that again.
It's just that easy.
Okay. So you replace the building.
So what you've done, this is at intersection level, but that means that this building, they've been made to understand that if they were to build out in this way, or encouraged, or some incentive, to get out that far, then that building might probably come in, that building would probably come in. If we would have, I hate to speak in hindsight, but if Walgreens, for instance, which would have been over here, would have shoved up to the sidewalk, that would have encouraged more people to come up to the sidewalk and got a much more downtown experience. Here's an example of one building. It's a gas station. It's got a bolt of asphalt around it. If you're a child or an elderly person or a young buck like myself, you're going to have a hard time getting there just as a human being. You get there as a car, walking. But this isn't built for human beings. And all they have to do in order to build it for human beings is when they come before the plan commission with their plan, this is their plan. The plan commission suggests maybe you push it out a little. Maybe this. How much more does that cost? Does the developer look better when he does that? Can he make that a selling point on his next job? Can the city kick in for sidewalks? Now you've got a place where people can get out of here, they can get out of here. It becomes a place where people linger and spend some money. And that's just one building. So one of the things I was impressed with down there was the guy who was talking about planning civic space, and you all heard me talk about this coffee shop. That way. Here we got this city-owned plot of land next to the firehouse, by the library, near a park, residential, pretty nice spot. But the city isn't going to buy a coffee shop. Isn't going to put a coffee shop up. That's for developers. That's for businessmen. What do you do? This guy got up and talked about a deliberate, phased approach to instigating change. It offers local solutions for local planning challenges. It's a short-term commitment and realistic expectation. These are all clues as to what we need. Low risks with a possibly high reward. Develop social capital between citizens, and that's something we need. And it builds organizational capacity between public, private institutions, nonprofits, and their constituents. What do you do? Tactical urbanism. That's what we call it. I hate urbanism. We call it something else. He has a nice logo. Here's what he did. And here's what they've been doing in New York, more urban areas. If something isn't there, and you think it would be nice to have it there, and you think people would like it there, you put it there. In the short term. So, in New York, in Times Square, they're saying, let's make this a pedestrian-only area. They painted grass down the ground. They put lawn chairs out for a weekend. And people used it. They closed off the streets. And then they said, well, you see how people use it? And now it's a pedestrian-only area where Times Square there's no cars. In some cities, they'll put a, they'll throw up a cafe just on a corner. They'll put potted plants up. And then people will come and eat there, they'll put some seats around there, they'll put a little tent up. And people get used to the idea of that. And suddenly you've got a developer or a business owner down the street who sees that, he says, it's a good idea, I'm going to get in there. But what you got to do is, you got to find somebody who wants to go in there. Let's just say, for example, down at Moondance, we were to get Harry to put a coffee wagon down there, and we put some chairs in there, we put a tent up, leave it up for 4 days. We tell the whole neighborhood that it's there. We tell people who go to the park that it's there. We tell people who go to the library that it's there. And then it's gone. It disappears. And then see what happens. But that means you have to do something. You have to waive the permits, for instance. You have to maybe find a sponsor to help him with some of his expenses. Maybe find somebody who has a big trailer or something to put it in. But it's fun. It's a community thing. You involve some of these nonprofit groups that are out there trying to improve the community, get them in there.
Do you know any of the history behind the 50th? The committee that put the 50th together? About the jazz festival that occurred over at Lincoln Park? Mm-hmm. And it was raving terrific success, and they sold out all the fish fries in one night, and they brought an extra order more because the number of people were coming in. And Eddie Butts was there. Mm-hmm. And he had you know where the Laguna is and all that?
Yeah.
It was a natural amphitheater. And so the parties that put that on and they had a big success that came into the council, and three of them sat over there. They said, we'd like to continue to do this for the community for the next 250 years or so. And the council said, no. Nope. Oh, by the way, he was the chairman of the
So you're
tactful. The point is that there were a lot of people that really tried to do exactly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And we brought it into the council for that additional. Give us a couple bucks here for that. That's really
nice. Well, I'd like to think we've changed.
We can change. Sometimes it just takes getting it out there, and then people realize it's gone.
I was talking about visualization, showing people a new discussion. This is the same thing, except you actually do it.
I'm totally with you.
So some of the other topics they talked about was, and this was all over the place, the death of suburban office work, which is kind of important to hospitals. So people saw this picture of the Mexican restaurant for sale. Giant suburban office park that for some reason there was no relationship between them. And one of the sessions they talked about how suburban office parks aren't popular anymore because the people who are in these buildings go from garage to garage. They've got the garage meeting in there, they've got the post office in there, they've even got a walking area right in there. So that this business here isn't. And they don't get to get outside the building anymore. So they're being encouraged, the employees are encouraging the bosses are encouraging the location managers to go back into the city. Things are happening around the menu.
They're saying there's nothing up the summit. There's nothing out. And, well, here there was something, but they just didn't avail themselves.
There you go.
Like Northwestern Mutual, which they feed everybody. Mm-hmm. They come, they never leave the building. They got exercise, everything else.
Including that Northwestern Mutual. That's where Northwestern Mutual is.
Yeah, so they don't leave the building. Mm-hmm. So you might as well be downtown.
Well, if you're downtown, you get out into the wide. And ideas come from a mixture of people. They all come from this monoculture.
But they give them a half-hour lunch hour. Give them a half-hour lunch hour to eat. That's a whole idea that helps pay for the lunch. At least that's what I was told, in a sense. And people don't want them to leave the building.
Well, you can talk to them if you want to talk. I don't get a gift for a
It
may not have a positive effect on surrounding businesses that surrounding businesses may want. I still don't have it.
Well, they're doing what they want to do.
The fact of the matter is, there was a development proposal to replace that with retail and all of that, but it didn't come up to the 27th quarter.
Starbucks
caught was I kind of noted?
And I might point out that what NML is proposing to do right across the street from that is exactly what you're talking about, right? It's creating that urban community that will help with the whole area.
But that would have been a two-story project on that corner?
Yeah.
It would be there right now. But the developer didn't think it was viable to build a two-story.
It was clear stories out there was driving.
Well, the state's going to take the building now for that. So it's going to
be building is now.
The state's going to take the land.
The point of this session was that some of these places that do have a choice of where they're going, they're choosing to go with something. And if there's nothing to do, and all it is to people in their backyards, that's nice for me to live at, but where I work, I want to have something to do. And the Wall Street Journal, fairly reputable paper, wrote a long story about how the movement is towards the cities. And there are suburbs that are, rather than concentrating on tax break or TIF district or the incentives in that way, they're building amenities, infrastructure, civic centers, things that would bring the businesses out there because their employees would have something to do in the community. What I was going to ask, is it legal for you to get food from outside and bring it back to you?
It's not legal. It's not. It's fine. You have a fixed little cafeteria where it's free.
You're the man.
It's not that it doesn't matter. But sometimes people will do that downtown. People will go out from time to time. Yeah, here there really are. There isn't that much.
But there's no rule saying.
No, there's no rule prohibiting it. It's usually an event kind of thing. You know, if you're going to have, a department activity or something like that, you're going to bring in a lunch. It's not an easy major thing, but the cafeteria has no food in the first night. There's not a whole lot of incentive to do that. And
I wouldn't be able to do it. It's the
convenience of it. And it's a community, it's a society. People have lunch with their friends, it's more to it than just, free food and good food. It's, your chance to get away from your desk and meet with your friends, and you don't have to go outside to do it. So, but there's no prohibition. It's just not like that. There's a plus side.
Now, the writer of that book, it's called The Triumph of Cities. Very concerned about that. Red tie, suit. He gave the closing keynote, filled the place up. And he was good. But he talked about this very thing, the idea that corporate cultures now don't want that money. They want their employees to get out and mix rather than constantly germinating inside their own company.
Something that kind of surprises me with our question. We wanted to build a trail up through Northwestern Mutual. Nothing to do. They don't want anybody using their trail, and they do not want that. They had trouble downtown with skateboarders and all. They were just dead set against connecting a trail to that so people could walk and even use their trails. They didn't want other people using their trails. Mm-hmm.
Well, times will change. There's no question about it.
Yeah, already looking at it.
But some every organization has some culture and more close to the companies won't do this, corporations won't do that. Some do, some don't.
You have to factor in 9/11 and the amount of security and the protocols that are in place immediately once that happened. Remember, I was at the courthouse with the team that would be in 16, so the pressure was all out, and that changed everything. So.
The day after 9/11?
There's always a reason for it.
The day after 9/11, the production.
41-3.
Nobody could get it.
I went to the Metropolitan Building Inspection seminar on development.
Yeah.
And the one thing that they really stressed is when you got, whether it's a GE, which we were out in the Pewaukee area, and I'm talking a lot about GE, or Northwestern Mutual, that you go through the business and find out what they feel they need. Don't just assume. And for instance, we talked about Northwestern. We aren't going to build restaurants around Northwestern Mutual. But GE, they don't serve meals. One of the big things was they wanted to see the restaurants about. And they talked about even coming in the community, and they have Quadraphics built out there. And so they talked to Quadraphics. What kind of people are going to move into this phenomenon called
Elwood.
And
Sussex.
Yeah, Sussex. And they talked to Quadraphics and says, our people don't move, they drive. So when they build another factory, the people drive to it. They don't generally move. And so design your community to serve the particular and go ask them and find out what they want. I think everybody's particular Northwestern, and we even talked about Northwestern versus GE, where everybody goes out to eat. So you want GE, or you want the laundry, the dry cleaners, and whatever, and designing it. Don't always build the big $500,000 houses because the market's like this. Mm-hmm. Find out what your market is and build for that market.
Yeah, and how is it going to change? We had and he talked about, and I think his comments were accurate. Yeah, the market will come back, but it won't be like it was today.
He's the one that
there'll probably always be some interesting big houses, but there won't be that being the center of the market the way it was. You can never be afraid of it. Because you could like the 70s and 80s now. That we do not support. Then for several years, that became the place for the large blocks, the bigger houses, the state types, and that sort of thing. And there may be some of that in the future, but just like you saw before, older people, there's going to be more of a market for multi-family dwellings. The point is that you can have all the ideas and concepts and plans you want, but basically, development is driven by the private sector and what developers think they can make money doing. And so it's not so much a matter of selling the city on something, it's selling developers on something.
Well, you also have to factor in. I mean, I've been up to General Motors, I've been in the places. When General Motors started shutting down, the crime started to rise. You could build the best modular programs and retail centers and everything we talk about. But if crime goes out of whack or school systems don't support the types of workers that the factories need, you got a ghost town. And that's what Detroit is. In fact, we have Detroit where I used to grow up on 765. And that is a 100-year problem. And so, I mean, I love, I've told you this many times, I love the historic 34. In fact, it was put on the calendar. Summer the 26th. But there's a big battle going on with the governor of the state and the mayor of Milwaukee over all of the police officers and firefighters wanting to move out of the city of Milwaukee. Now, why are they moving out? I mean, I think there's a lot of people that want to move urbanism. There's no doubt about that. But then there's also other people that are probably going to be moving in this direction.
I think,
I mean, there's a lot of factors.
If I could just bring one point on this, is I think there are a lot of us in our age bracket, a lot of the police department wants to run off here, are our age bracket in the late 40s and 50s. And they're thinking that that same dream that we have of buying a suburban home or having a lot or having a schedule. Well, you two guys are so you're dinosaurs.
We're beyond it.
You're dinosaurs. But that's lovingly said. But the issue is going to be, it's the group that, like my daughter as a high school student, and what she sees in front of her, she can't wait to get the hell out of her. She keeps asking me, why do I waste my time on front? And I say, because this is the city I've chosen, and I love it. But I think what I want to do is a city that's going to attract those people back. And I agree with Randy, we've got to do it for the private sector. There has to be, I don't want to say, you can't tell them what to do. But when you give them some guidance, and the guidance is in the form of, we can't afford as a city the infrastructure for the kind of development that they need. We can't afford the police protection or the fire protection for those spread out kinds of issues. And I don't think people are going to be able to afford the energy costs for those kind of homes. So when you come to what he's talking about, and this urbanism with the stacked houses, that's much more efficient. From an energy standpoint, from an infrastructure standpoint, and from our cost standpoint as a city. So we have to provide some guidance to where we want the direction to go. But also think about who do we want to attract back to the center? Who do we want to live in for 2030? The housing stock that we're building right now is going to last 50 to 100 years. That's what's going to last. So we're stuck with some of that unless we're going to tear it back and start over. The commercial stock lasts a little less. The construction practices are usually worse, 25 to 50. But what John's saying, what the Newark's are saying, when I was in Washington, I apologize, I missed several planning commissions. I apologize, so I was in Washington, so I was in Michigan. They're saying the exact same thing. They anticipate that the new stock housing is going to be rentals, and it's going to be the 4 to 20 unit types of rentals, small apartments, and apartments on top of real estate of commercial ventures, that's going to be the most popular. That's the kind of thing that people see that they gravitate. The Cedar Rivers, the Bay Shores, the Middleton Heights, and Third Ward in Milwaukee is the most popular real estate. It kind of quashed for a while, but it's taken off again. But I agree, Mayor, there is this dichotomy sometimes that some people want to leave a certain area, but that can be moved down to Third Ward. You're right. I think that's
one,
and that's also a fair.
But I guess I'd also say this, is that it's well known that in Illinois and other parts of the country, that businesses in those big businesses that are in those areas are having a great deal of trouble finding qualified workers to man their operations. And then in Illinois, they've raised the taxes a great deal. I mean, it's very conceivable that you could land a Sears worldwide headquarters, or you could have a Kohl's up here instantaneously, and they would build fantastic campuses. And they would also maybe help to build the types of urbanism that you're talking around their campuses. But I don't think the suburban office part is dead quite yet. I think it's might be dead in many parts of the country. I think it's the school system is really huge as far as getting the types of businesses you want to have in here. Crime, big time. It's a big time factor.
But the new urbanism is one of the things that really is great for crime, because they've shown over time that we have residential properties on top of commercial structures in those areas, because you have more eyes on the street.
Well, you know, I'm
more pedestrian than
the Milwaukee around the historic Third Ward down by the river. Mm-hmm. Fantastic, absolutely terrific.
And then have the low climate.
However, in the last month or so, you've seen national news where the police chief has marched officers into the near south side, very close to them. Why? Because the gangs are out of control. And if there's ever a fear, I mean, I grew up in Northwest Side, there's a real fear that crime is not going to be controlled. You'll see people moving out of those areas like there's no tomorrows, and the high rises that are down there in full, they'll be vacated.
But my argument why the gangs out of control in the south side is all the money that the city of Milwaukee pumped in on Third Ward, Walker's Point. They're just our project on the KK River, the district system. We're finally getting, and part of the reason was for that was several communities, Ben Gramling and Peter McAvoy, and there are others behind the scenes, if you know those.
Yeah, I know. Mayor, they start, the money is starting to go into that area, and when you start to redevelop an area, you need more reason to care for it.
I think Rocky Marcoux is done.
And Rocky Marcoux is
fantastic.
And I think he sees this KK River project, and I think we want to do
the stuff that we want. Well, isn't it, if I might, isn't that the message you're trying to show us with this slide? Trends are changing.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be smart, you need to look at it, how those change, those trends are changing in your community and where you'd like it to be, where it's been, and a lot of course to get there.
Yeah.
Because it won't happen by accident.
We have to plan for, we have to build communities because we don't have that sense of community now. And we have to figure out where is that going to be. And you can't have 27 different downtowns. You've got to really have to concentrate on one and then try and elevate the types of quality development that comes in.
The only way growth is going to be is the money. I mean, we've got zero increase. We're just talking, I guess, did the cost estimates for the sidewalks on 31st. How the hell are we ever going to get money to build sidewalks on 31st? We didn't have money to put a boulevard in on 76.
Coming around, and it's going to come around in a new paradigm whereby developers are looking for this sort of stuff. And the money will be there. The government might not have the money, which is standard now. The developers will come forward with that, and they'll be willing to pay that extra debt.
This is where I thought about
you drive the country, you look at the Southwest, and what's going on.
I'm not sure we should send John
to
here.
Well, this is great. I think the guidance
that
the community can provide the guidance, like they did in around Ann Arbor, in those areas where they wanted these small communities to keep their community feel. So they required that the developers, whenever they built a new subdivision, had to connect not only the streets, but they had to connect trails. They had to have walking. They had to make sure it was pedestrian friendly, and it was just a requirement. And the developers, it was not. They all have the same set of rules. So there's not like one developer being favored over another developer, or another community being favored over. It was a regional plan to have trails, and it worked.
Well, like, what the
developers, natural centers,
the developers, I know,
hang out.
Their whole message was, I come into a community, and I've heard Parsonson say this. I can't remember the community he talked about going into it, but he at the ad hoc meeting, he said, we showed up, we had these plans to build these houses in a subdivision, but they were ready with these plans, smaller lots, and closer together. They were ready.
Sure.
And I hadn't thought about that, but they made it easy. The plan commission, the plan office, they made it easy.
And he made money.
He made money. And what these developers are saying, they're not going to go to this conference just because it's in Madison. They're going there because there is money in this. And if you go to the Common Council or the Plan Commission or community that's ready, that has the language, that has the ability to act quickly, just for an example, the Common Council had a proposal come before them this past week. Next to sentence. And it's, there's the building, there's your moat of asphalt around it, that's what you guys get. And that's it. Well, we want development. So everybody said, crippled themselves saying, thanks very much, that's very nice. But that's what they'll always do. They'll always go the easy way first. If you wanted to go up to the sidewalk and put some tables in back to serve that neighborhood, because now we hear the neighborhood wants to be connected to sentence after wanting gates and mounds of earth between them and Sendix. Now, they want a path so they can get to Sendix. They found out that would be a cool thing. But we didn't know back then to tell Sendix, don't put a loading dock back there, put an access back there. Now, in Middleton Hills, I went to a fascinating three-hour thing where they gave the whole history of Middleton Hills, how it was developed, designed, the regulatory hoops they jumped through, and some of the things that they did that people didn't necessarily agree with.
There was a letter to the editor, I wish you could find the guy to see how it feels now. And what he said was, you're building narrow streets and houses too close together, you're building a ghetto, he said. It'll be a ghetto. So they put up the chart, and here's your property going up in the suburb next door, and now it's going down, and Middleton Hills is going like this and like this and like this, because they took the time. So when that big grocery store went in, and that big grocery store wasn't according to plan, but they knew how to handle it. If you put a big grocery store in at the beginning at the entrance of Middleton Hills, the requirement was in the back corner for all the area that's facing, there has to be not only a door and an entry, forget this loading dock stuff, not only a door and an entry, but there has to be a checkout. I mean, that's a level of detail. That's going three layers into their business. Now, some people would say, you can't tell business from business, but they did. And now the neighborhood is well served, and the neighborhood is appreciating very well. I wish I could afford a house there. I can't, because the values are going up and up and up. So what the developers say is, they walk into a community, and you're going to throw down your easiest block right away. And they say that, you know, stamp it out, there it is. And hopefully they say, yep, you're just going to do it. But if they got their wits about them, if they got their ducks in a row, and say, look, we think pushing it up would be a good idea for this reason and that reason, it will help you out. We have the staff ready to jump in, and we've got students at the high school who are learning to Google SketchUp, and they'll do some plans for you. The community will get behind you. We'll make a big deal out of this, and that developer's a hero. Now you're going to get some. That's why they all walk around places like CNU saying, you get the development you deserve. Because the first thing you get when they sit at this table is the low ball. And these communities would have done better if they didn't take the low ball.
For example, here?
I'll give you your email.
Middleton doesn't count. I'll tell you why.
No, I don't agree with you.
Because you've got the economic driver. You've got big government and big university sucking money in from the state. If we had a constant supply of money coming in here, all we had to do was deal with urbanization, that would be great. What we need to do is get jobs here so that the young people who grow up here can afford to stay in this community and have that sense of community. Because right now, for 20, 25 years, the vast majority of them that grow up here go someplace else. And so we don't, and the vast majority of people who are here came from someplace else. And that's why we don't have that sense.
But what we need is
the jobs that will enable the people to grow up here to stay here, and then we'll build a sense of community.
But you're talking about an either-or situation. It's not either-or. Someone doesn't come to the Grant Commission and say, this is what I want to do, and you say, either you do this, or we don't want that. That's not what it is. It is, we have a suggestion.
I'll speak for myself. You're not my authorized spokesperson.
The point I'm making is, these developers said that if I go to a community that offers a different idea, and it seems to make sense, and we go that way, and he makes money, and the community is happy with what happens, that's great. But they don't come in with that. They come in with, you know, mold around the little box. So what you're saying to me is, I'm looking at either or.
I'm not saying that to you. But that's what you're hearing. That's the sound rattling inside between your ears. It's not what's coming from you. You're telling me what you're hearing, not what I'm saying.
I think we'll go to the next slide if you've gone up or down. Civic engagement, Web 2.0. One of the major topics here, and one of the major topics at CNU, is how do you get people to understand why you do things, why you don't do other things, how they can get involved, why something is maybe a good idea or a bad idea, or what they think they want to be involved with. This is just one example. This is a place, an online service called MindMix. Omaha bought into this. It's a subscription service. I think they paid $3,700 a year to have a place where people can put their ideas, and then people can respond to that. Also interacts with Facebook, Twitter, regular email. So it uses the present social media that people are comfortable with. And people throw their ideas in there, or their reactions to the proposals in government. And they have some level of civic engagement that didn't exist before. Now this is something you have to pay for. There are things that are free. But the fact of the matter is, we've seen already these de facto websites that grow up and people comment there. And, you know, maybe you've got a dozen people who are commenting back and forth. But at the same time, it is allowing people to engage, get their opinion out there, or to learn about things that are happening in the community. We don't really have something like that. And I talked to three or four different companies that do things like this about what they've done for different communities. And it seems like it would be a good idea. And when you have people coming in and you say you don't have any more quarry thing happening, maybe this would avoid that. Or when you have an idea for a two- or three-story building, if people are nervous about a two- or three-story building, maybe this is a way to get people involved rather than make so. What do we do with this piece of land? What would be your idea that would solve this problem? So it's just something that I think might be nice to explore. Use what we have presently, or get someone like this involved. And then for anybody else who...
I didn't quite understand. So that's a mind mixer is a place where you could rent space? Or?
They're a company that will set up the build. They have the server space. They have this interface. So then you would say to them, well, we've got these five machines that we're exploring and look those up.
Oh.
And then they have this, they have like an open submission area where this person had an idea about the mission of products, this one had an idea about transportation. People have ideas, and then people will react to the ideas. And obviously, they're trying to sell their product, but according to them and according to the websites I've gone to, you get a good number of people on both sides of issues in a civil manner.
Kind of a town hall.
So, a town hall. But because people are getting comfortable with the Twitter thing, with the Facebook thing, this is not new. They understand how to do this. And you can sign up with some of these services through your Facebook account. People like that. They just click it. So it's something to think about.
You know, it probably would be a great idea is to bring some of the young people into the community, especially seniors and juniors in college, right? Or sophomores, juniors in college, and find out from them what they want. I mean, I think that they don't want any part of government at all. And I don't know how we would facilitate that because there's that big trust factor. I mean, every politician is place is totally corrupt and get rid of them all. I mean, that's a legitimate mindset. So
that's 7 of those working for the city.
Yeah.
College kids.
Yeah. Say nothing of the department.
I think the high school has some program to in some contact with
because there really
might be an opportunity.
Yeah, because there's kind of like this disconnect between you know, when Bing Crosby was singing the songs and then Elvis Presley did it. I mean, there's that kind of a disconnect right now.
And I would suggest, Mayor, that you don't do what they probably would do with the high school kids. Probably not too well. And engage them.
Then you like
these
this.
Kinds of conversations. I think they're...
It exposes you to everything.
Right.
And anybody like can go on and interact with your city on its... Well,
from what I've seen at Franklin High School, you know, back in my little bias, I used to watch this TV show, Queen. I used to think, there's no high school on the planet that has that kind of talent. This is such a crowded, super show. And I said, well, you know, like, the high school kids are putting on a league for eight or something at high school. Went down there, and I had to stay corrected. Those kids are very talented. When they get their mind wrapped around something like this, you want to engage them, engage those children. They can tell you and come up with those designs. And I like this idea to talk about a coffee shop, complex, around the library,
where you want to
get something started. See if there's going to be people that think it's stupid, there's going to be people that think it might work, but get some conversation started around there, or do it back on 76 in Watson, where they have the coffee shop, where the kids were going for a long time and were closed. We need to have that dialogue about what we need.
Well, I think you also need, it was just my personality when I was watching the public access channels today to just see what is going on in the municipalities. And I went into Wauwatosa. Just so happened that they're doing their 5-year forecast, financial forecast, and they're projecting a $7 million hole. And they have 34% of their dollars in their fund balance, so they have a triple A bond rating. but with the new state budget and everything, revenues coming in is flatlined, expenses is like this. So they're projecting $70 million problem. Why do I bring that up? Because past city budgets, I recommended having like $8,000 in an account for the Economic Development Commission. That money went away. Went away to restore a planning position, actually. There's always been this desire to get some money from the hotels and the motels, but that's never really come to fruition.
Well, thanks.
Where I'm going with it is, this is great stuff. This is what we should be doing all the time, but when it comes down to economic development, it's the first thing that gets done. It's police officers and firefighters versus the economic development dollars. And the other thing I was listening to today with the Wauwatosa thing is that there's a big project, I think it was tonight, in downtown Tulsa, in the old section, where the business community, the North Shore community group, business group, is putting out events today. And it's got a program to do much of what you just showed us, and to rebuild that urbanism. But it was a business group that's interacting with their government and they're working with it. We have the Village of St. Martin's group, and we have condo association groups, and we have homeowners association groups, but we really don't have, you know, like the 76th and Ross and group of businesses that come in here tonight and say, you know, this is right, that's wrong. And so I think we need to promote that as well. In other well-established communities, Shorewood, Whitefish Bay, downtown Milwaukee, they have all those groups that have been in place for 50 to 100 years. That's, we're really missing that. And then we also got to bring the kids in.
Well, also, was the Martini that gone? It was the upscale grocery store that stayed there for a while and then gone. Well, what mean should we be directed? And where's the effort to learn, you know, what is an appropriate and accurate perception of our community? What should have been done differently to make that work? And so with that, you know, we've got opportunities to learn here. And I'm not sure we're learning the things that, you know, we're not asking the right questions. I don't know. Maybe
we'll
have somebody to do the analysis.
I think I'm the only person that hasn't been to Woodward. Outside of that, I think everybody is shopping down at Woodward's.
Yes.
But if you were to, if Woodman's was to come in here and say, we want to build, I wonder what kind of reaction would be. Yet, the people in Franklin are shopping at Woodward's. But it fits into what you you're saying with you bring in an upscale grocery store and you think, well, that's going to be mob all the time, and what you find is many of the people you thought were going to go there are actually going to Woodman's.
We can get into discussion about why the coffee shop or why the Sundays. I think
they starve except for Friday and Saturday night. A sit-down restaurant with tablecloth. They get no business during the week. I've talked to the Italian restaurant. He said they do fantastic jobs over the weekend. They have no money during the week.
That's because Franklin is not a place for people that are in base. We don't have the stuff. If you go down and take a look at the third ward, you take a look at Cedarwood, you take a look at, and you were talking about, you know, Middleton Heights doesn't count. I'll give you Buffalo Grove. I'll give you all those places on the North Shore of Chicago that have city centers, and they built them. They didn't. They are new communities. They're not old like Cedarwood. They built those places, and they built them with the specific purpose of getting people not to go down to downtown Chicago. That's where they don't want to go. They stay up. We got to have some kind of selfishness like that to get people to stay. And you got to have, and I shouldn't say God, not to use the term God. It would be really nice as a community, we would start with something small. And I really think we should try to think about
getting the council or getting someone to try something, either at the library or pick a spot and say, we're going to try this and just see if it works.
I've already got a spot for a coffee shop.
I'm thinking, to be selfish, because what the Trail Committee is doing, 51st and Rawson, try something there with that Sundays. You got people showing up there, that place is popular. Try something there for once. Something on the other side. There's that crappy building over there. I don't know who owns it. If you put something new,
we should have had one we have.
Probably Vulcan. I don't like Vulcan. But, you know, but put something over there and tie it into a sidewalk that we're going to come down 51st Street because that is going to get done. But it might not be the right location, and I am not a commercial developer. I have no idea. We've got to bring them in and say, what do you think? I mean, is the library the place, or is it 76 and Rawson the place, or is it 51st and Rawson? Do we want to, is that where we want to, do we want to make a triangle of all three of them? That they all connect together in some way that you can move in.
And you know, you demonstrate. You just got to show them. You've got a perfect spot right over the end of the There's some residential around there.
Absolutely.
And there's vacant lots available. Buildings with spaces open. Why isn't it happening? Those are the questions we have to ask. It's not that we don't have locations.
And we'll just, I had a long conversation with Scott Matthew one time about this at one of those clean water conferences that Kevin Schaefer was putting. The developers come in and they'll show you how much money they'll save doing it this way because they have less concrete, smaller streets, less stormwater infrastructure. It's cheaper. Part of the problem is communities like ours have a UDO that's this thing. Now, some of it was put together for very good reasons. I always tell people, don't be pointing fingers at a bad law because somebody had a real good reason why they put it in there. It's just been forgotten. But we have so many rules that it's easier for them to get their $1 million. It's not just that they want to make money. They want to keep their money moving from one development to the next. And if we don't provide them with this plan that, hey, we're ready for you. You know, we've got this idea for this new development. What do you think? We'll grease the skids through the process if you listen to us a little bit and do some of these things that we are thinking about. What do you think? In a partnership, not telling them what to do, but saying, we think this will work, we think this is how you can save money, what do you think? I think the developers would go, you get Scott Matthew and the Builders Association on board with you to help you sponsor that type of thing. And I think they'd go for it.
That's pretty much what Scott Matthew said when he came in.
Absolutely. I wasn't here.
I might, because Randy was making an excellent point, is how do we learn and grow from this and get answers? And I think that's maybe why you're showing us the sign. There are new higher tech alternatives where for $3,700 a year, a community can have a community contact board like this where they can comment on what they think. They can talk to elected officials without having to talk to them. You can hear from children and elderly, and everybody can just go and comment and link up at whatever level they're comfortable. But it's a very cheap and effective way to take the pulse of the community and find out where they're at and what they think you're doing right and wrong, and they never have to sit through a long, boring meeting in hard chairs or deal with elected officials that they can't stand. It provides an open forum that everybody has equal access to, and they can dump ideas. And you don't have to go out and search out a high school or a college group. People are going to find it, and this is the Franklin site. They'll go there.
It would be nice to have
that sort of information given to you for nothing.
It would be nice to have some Nexus ideas like in 51st and Rawson. And I'm just throwing these out because they're all around my house. They're really selfish.
Sorry. I was going to say.
Just butt in.
Yeah, we're all butting in now.
I wanted to remind everybody that we do have a lot of successes in Franklin already. So I was about to say.
That
we're too down on ourselves. And I don't think we are. As a planning commission, maybe, because we have lots of successes. We got sidewalks on both sides of Direct Zone, not just one. How many streets in Franklin have sidewalks on both sides of the street? Not too many. Shops in Wyndham Village, we got some of those buildings front up against the road. Not the big ones, not as much as we're looking for over here, but we got some. We got dental associates to be up against the street. We got dental associates that reduced parking. They could even have more reduced parking if they would only have had a neighbor that would have cooperated with them and let them share parking.
We got Walmart to come up to the 27th Street corridors.
Yeah. So we have successes in Franklin.
The hospital's kind of.
Yep. And just more recently, the multi-tenant retail building next to Centers. Common Council suggested to the applicant bring that building closer to Rossin. He didn't want to. We have the OIL 2 standards that would have made it a little bit easier for him to do that. So it wouldn't have addressed everything. I think there's still going to be a bigger setback from Rossin. But we have the OIL 2 that would have made it easier for him to do it. So he couldn't blame the UDO for not wanting to do it.
Right.
He didn't want to do it.
Take it or leave it, right? Yep. I mean, his attitude was to approve it.
One of the things that we're missing here that other communities have and have had for many, many years, we have a chamber of commerce, but we have a joint chamber of commerce.
I don't feel like kinship with it.
Well, I'm saying we don't have our own chamber of commerce.
Cheerleaders.
Cheerleaders that are out there all the time. I love going to the football games and the basketball games and all that, but there's not this connection between what's going on over there and what's going on in the city and vice versa. Other communities, we have groups, we have citizen groups that make all that thing, they meld it. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because people like me came from the northwest side and moved in here, and my neighbors moved in here, and they moved in here. And so there's no roots.
They don't work in the city, they don't recreate in the city.
We become a bedroom community, yes, whether we wanted to or not. We were something, but we're a bedroom community. If we want to change, we're going to have to act, and again, conscious to what you're talking about, Randy, we're not going to tell them how to do it, but we got to provide some guidance that we no longer want to be a bedroom community because we can't afford to be a bedroom community because our schools are too costly and our infrastructure costs too much, and bedroom communities can't pay the taxes without having exorbitant property tax. And we don't have it now, but we will if we continue down this path. I mean, that's inevitable.
Attitudes have to change.
Well, I was trying to tell you with Wauwatosa, now they have AAA bond rating. They are so solid. Just their projections I watched today.
But
$7 million in the hole.
But also remember, they've lost a tremendous amount of industry.
No growth.
And they've had no growth.
That's what was being. You don't have the growth. I mean, it's nice to sit here. I mean, I've had to put the budgets together. It's not a real desirable thing to be looking at laying off, like to reduce in police and fire when the community is growing. And this new budget that we've got is going to be abusive.
But listen to what you're saying. Community can afford to be a bedroom community if there are jobs in the metro area that people can go to, earn the money, come home, and then you want the lifestyle amenities in your bedroom community. If we're not going to be a bedroom community, that means we have to bring in the jobs that create the wealth to fund the community.
Right.
To me, that's the engine that drives things. We can all have our own views about what the lifestyle of entities ought to be. What we need is the economic engine. And stop trying to convince ourselves that if we only had the lifestyle of entities, then the jobs would come. I'm not sure which is the chicken and which is the egg.
Well, I think the economic corridor between Chicago, Milwaukee, Madison, and Minneapolis is going to become a reality. I think there'll be some communication portals. Now maybe it'll change, but I think we are there. We should be there. We should be in the mix. But the bedroom community, you got to decide then. I mean, your houses have to be over $350,000. Don't worry. I mean, in the conventional wisdom, as we are now that might change too. But right now, you have to have homes over $350,000 for them to support the infrastructure and the tax structure for the size of the community.
And we were headed in that direction, but I think we've stopped going in that direction. There's going to be a little bit of resurrection, but I would agree with Scott Mack. I don't think it's going to be that the way it was. So I think we need to look for another direction to go. I think that's why we're doing exactly the right thing by getting the Ryan Creek Interceptor in there so we've got sewer there, a little more land. Our plus is going to be an access to lake water. So we're going to be, I think, because of that, when we get the sewer in, we're going to have land available that will be a attractive place to grow for businesses to come in. Hopefully, by the time that we'll get that done, by the time the economy is coming back, things could come together for us. But yeah, we need to look at things to be a little bit different than just developers wanting to come in and divide up the land to build big houses. I would agree with you. We need to get past the bedroom community mentality and start looking for an economic engine.
Right, and this
create wealth in this community.
And Randy, I'm going to dispute a little bit what you're talking about the where we're going to find the money is in the city. I don't think with the new direction the economy's going to take, I think we're going to see, but I always kind of bothered your wisdom on economics and finance, because I'm probably wrong. But what they're talking about in Washington is it's going to be communities like Franklin or these outer ring suburbs that bring in small businesses who get set up, not in the industrial park setting that we modeled in the past, but in the things that he's talking about, where you have commercial ventures, business ventures. You have your industrial park like down by the dump where you do the dirty industries. I call them dirty. I don't mean it in a bad way. But the dirty industries that people don't really want to see. They want to work there. They don't want to have to see it all the time. But in these areas, you set up these little commercial hubs with businesses that are more thought-driven, and they are these small 10, 15-folk operations that they generate a lot of income. And I think we're going to see more of that in these areas, because Franklin has a lot to offer as far as space, quietness.
As I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about maybe we should rethink the Crossroads program. Because right now, it's big box, it's lots of parking lot, it's got the main drags that keep the businesses separated, maybe the trees, the divided highway. You know, maybe that Crossroads plan at the time was okay.
Crossroads is a place where, you could put the businesses out on the street, and they put some residential, some multi-floor residential back there, and with the parking in between, and you can go, it's a spot where you have to park dry, something like that. Now, of course, it's going to be limited in scope simply because you still got that level area to be used there.
Civic center area might be there.
Well, if I think of, what's going to be my interest, I'm waiting for somebody to come in and do a nice little senior project over here between the bank and the church, because now you've got Target, you've got Pick and Save over there, you've got the medical center across the street here. To me, that's a perfect place for me within the next few years to get out of my house and build from there what I'm looking for, And there was an apartment complex that was approved there many years ago. Never got developed.
And the coffee shop
still sitting there. And
cafe.
And to me, the Civic Center area, historically called the Civic Center area, that's a place where I think we ought to be exploring all the way down to Crossroads. Basically, the area, Highway 100, Loomis, Drexel, that sort of triangle in there, and then, the area around it.
All you need to do is somehow control the traffic on Loomis that people are driving through.
Well, or give them a reason to stop. I mean, given the sort of attractive businesses that they want
to
stop.
But there are things you could do to Loomis to make it less.
Then the county stays the
same. It's a state. But you can get, I think the state would like, Scott Walker would be water. Scott Walker would be water. It would be creating jobs.
I like the idea of rethinking the Crossroads, because this is a different time. When we had that plan by PDI, things were moving in Franklin. We had developer and big boxes banging on the door.
It was best practices.
Now, Johnny having liked us, it's time for Franklin to look and see if there is a hardware
community there. You're not going to get the big homes. Maybe what you sell is the luxury condo.
But in the six and Ryan.
But John, how many slots you got left?
That would have a sewer.
Go for it.
I just thought of that. I said, that way you sell the community. And maybe that's what the paradigm needs to shift. And start to sell.
Well, I think there's a chance. My bias is marketing. I'm in marketing. You've never marketed the community.
Nope. And you always took the money away from it.
I've got the energy on this commission and enough diversity of opinion that we can become a catalyst to try something that we can all come to consensus on to move forward.
Well,
in there. And I like John's idea. I think this is where this is some things we should consider for where we should think about this city.
It's hard to tell a story. You have to tell a story. And we don't
think about our poor staff over here. They've got to think it up.
You can tell a story on this sort of thing. You can say, for instance, this needs to be done because of this. And then you have YouTube, you have little videos that you show. There was a last planning commission. We missed the presentation by school children. Who were talking about solutions to, I forget which road or which area.
Drexel.
Was it Pleasant View?
Drexel.
Pleasant View, did it?
South.
Robinwood, South of Glen.
So, you've got kids thinking about how do we solve traffic stuff. And we weren't involved. We didn't see it. We didn't appreciated and weren't part of it. It wasn't on anything like this. It was a schedule problem. We couldn't get in there. We had trails. They didn't have a mystery. But those are the sort of things that this brings together. And makes people, makes people feel like they have some voice. You see the attitude people have made them either. I didn't know, why don't we know things? This is a fait accompli, it's going to get done no matter what. And something like this is...
I'm not so sure it would select that part.
They
said the same thing.
They didn't understand the situation.
All I want to say is, if he's going to get the quarry shut down, I want the airport shut down, because the planes, as you know, Mayor, the planes piss me off.
I'm trying to get a turn towards Oak Creek.
We should move the quarry.
Wait, John? There were people, there was one person here that said, move the quarry. Honest to God, she said, move the quarry.
Taxpayer revolt needed to be moved to high school. Some guy got up and actually said, move the quarry to the business.
No, it's true.
Well, all right, last slide. There is another, another conference next year. I think it'll be easier to get volunteers when you see it's in West Palm.
Are you putting your request in now?
I don't see that happening. I'm not optimistic. So there you go.
Nice job,
time.
John.
John, we're giving you time off to go to West Palm Beach.
Yeah, that was really good.
That was a really good job.
They actually, I saw these guys from the conference. We're all over the east side of Milwaukee and down. They had big groups that were on bikes, and they were walking through the Third Ward. They were over by the old Third World. They were over by several things.
Well, I say we make a motion to adjourn.
Well, can I just make one real quick?
Okay.
One of the things that Jack and I, Mayor, will be coming to see you about on the Trails Committee is the sidewalks on 51st Street. We've got the cost estimates for the sidewalks now. Jack and I will be setting up a meeting with you. Lisa will set up a meeting that we'll bring that, talk about how we want to come forward with what kind of report or a tech memo or whatever we're going to do, that we'll make a presentation to the Planning Commission and then to the Council with some recommendations from the Trail Committee. And then the Trail Committee will actually ask, we've pretty much done, if you feel we're going to carry that standard forward or if we're completed with that, we've got to that point. And then if you want us to move on into the Safe Routes to School and continue with that. Because the council, we were kind of a one-stop shop. We've expanded our work a little bit, but I think it would be good to come back with that. I'm done.
So moved.
All right. So moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, I just have a motion carried. I'm trying to remember if this is the fourth night in a row or the third night in a row. Third. That was really good. Well, the one conference there that we all had, and everybody's concerned. Everybody really wants to make it work. Use it as an opportunity.
Well, I'd like to, Mayor, and I'd like to meet with him and just talk to him. Actually, I'd like to see him go wrap all the way out and get right away all the way around. That could be a big problem.